I gazed in awe at the wonders of Allah. And as I learned the cruel lessons of life, Islam shone through as my guiding
light. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the second in the series of my journey from missionary to Muslim. If you missed the first one, I'm sure you'll be able to go on the internet and be able to find the first part. But I'll give you a quick recap. Grew up in a family that allowed me to go to Catholic school to start with. And probably was a good idea because it gave me some basic rooting in Islam. It helped me to understand that there's only one God. And even though the Christian church was trying to tell me there was a Trinity or more than one God, I knew from a young age there could only be one God. So one good thing that came from sending me to a Christian school is that I started to see truth from error. So even though they were teaching me doctrines that were the church had, I already understood from a very young age that there was only one God. But anyway, that didn't stop me asking very difficult questions to the people around me at that time, like, did Adam have a belly button? Why is it that we follow the teachings of the church and call people priests and nuns, or priests and sisters, when they're not really our biological sisters or our biological fathers? So many questions that came up. Remember, as well as I spoke about having a dream about the seven heavens with this chanting that sounded like la, 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 and no one could give me any answers for them at that time. And then also spoke a little bit about how I started to see what was going on politically in the world at that time. Now, growing up in South Africa, I understood for the first time that there was a difference between the pigmentation of people's skin, and I couldn't understand why it was like that. So from a very young age, I became an activist, if you want, and I tried to fight for the rights of the people, of all people, regardless of what color your skin was. And so at a very young age, about 12 or 13 years old, I started getting involved in the underground movement in my country. And the underground movement I'm talking about is the African National Congress, or ANC. I became a member of the South African Communist Party at a very young age, even though I was a Christian. And I began to see that there was a need for people to do something about what was happening in our country. And so from a very young age, I was labeled as a leftist, and I was people used to say, you know, you forgot your own culture, you don't know what your culture is. And I used to say to people, but if my culture goes against the beliefs that I believe, then my culture has to lose out. So then my culture has to lose out. And so wherever there's a conflict between what my beliefs were and what my culture said, my culture had to give way for the truth of the belief. And so I find that truth even till today, but we'll keep that for a later stage. But what is important that I learned at this young age is that every human being was created by God, and God does not make mistakes. So if God wanted me to be born into a Greek family, I would have been born into a Greek family. If he wanted me to be born into a Jewish family, I would have been born into a Jewish family. If he wanted me to be born into an Italian family, I would have been born into an Italian family. So I understood as well, this is the second lesson I learned very, very young, was that everything is in the control and in the hands of God. God has everything. Everything is preordained. Everything is predestined. And many people are afraid of this word predestined, but all that means is that there is a great plan, a master plan for your life. It doesn't mean that you, because you were born a Hindu, that you remained a Hindu your whole life. This is where you started. This is your starting block. This is what was given to you. However, you need to progress. You need to move further. One of the greatest lessons in life is to know that you need to search for the truth and that the truth will set you free. Where you look for the truth may be the problem. You see, some of us look for truth in the wrong places. But let me get back to the topic at hand, and I'll bring that in, inshallah, later in the series. So politically, I started to have a look at what was going on. And because I saw what was going on politically in my country and the atrocities and the unbalance and the injustice, I started to find a problem in the same thing happening within the churches. For example, the church I went to was only for white people, and only white people were permitted to enter the church. And so I thought, well, how can you preach from the Bible that says that everybody is one brother and we're all created from one God, and then have prejudice or racism because of somebody's pigmentation of their skin? And so I felt a calling to try and find a right way of teaching people what the Bible said. And so I started reading more about the Bible. But at this point, I wouldn't call myself a practicing Christian. All I would say at this point in my life is I found religion interesting. And I found it that I enjoyed the rituals and the activities that were involved in the church, but not to an extent that I would call myself actually a Christian. I wasn't a person who really followed the Bible. I just found it interesting. So what happened by the time I was 13 years old, I was away on holiday at one of the coastal towns in my country, which is beautiful. We have a beautiful coastline, and I learned to surf from a very, very young age. So I'm one of those guys with the with a surfboard under his arm and they're running along the beach looking for a perfect wave. That was me. And so at the age of 13, I used to spend a lot of time in the water. And one of my very close friends, him and I used to go down surfing in the afternoons. And one day we finished up very late. We finished up at about 3 or 4 or maybe even 5 o'clock in the evening from surfing. And as we came onto the shore, we heard these people playing guitars and singing. And they were sitting in a circle. So he went up and we were like, what are you guys doing? And they said, no, they're one family that had come down to the coast and they were Christians and they were just singing some praises to God. Now, this was very interesting to me because I'd never heard anyone use the word praises to God in a sentence. See, in the church that I came from, we were very, very strict and very, very traditional. And so I listened to these people and they said, well, you can come sit with us. They're having a barbecue on the beach, a braai, as we call it in our country. And they were cooking meat and they gave us some food to eat and they gave us something to drink and we were talking and discussing things. And they said, you know what you need in your life? And we said, what? They said, you need to become a Christian. You need to have Jesus in your life. So I said to them, but I do have Jesus in my life. And they said, no, you need to make a commitment. You have to say these few words. And if you say these few words, then you'll be guaranteed a ticket into heaven. No matter what you do in the future, no matter what you've done in the past, no matter what you've done in the present, it will make no difference. Because if you say these few words, you'll have a ticket that will guarantee you citizenship in heaven one day. And I thought, wow, the church that I come from, the Catholic Church, if I died without saying a confession to the priest, I'm going to go to hell because that's what the priest told me. Here I've got a nice easy way out. All I have to do is say these few words and I'm guaranteed no matter what I do in the past, no matter what I do in the present, no matter what I do in the future, my sins are forgiven and I have absolutely no problem. I have a guaranteed place in heaven. So I thought, wow, this is cool. So I said, yeah, sign me up. I'll give me the pen. I've got my pen here. Let's sign the contract and I'm quite happy to go. And so I did. So when I went back to my family and I said to him, guess what happened? I've just been guaranteed a place in heaven. What do you think their reaction was? Their reaction was, what? You've been speaking to these insane born-again Christian people. And they were very upset about it. My parents were upset. My father was upset. My mother was upset. In fact, the whole family went out. And I'm sure if we were in America at the time, they probably would have had torches and they would have had picks and they'd be running down to set these people on fire. But it's South Africa, so we don't do things as extreme as that. And so when they eventually found these people on the beach, they said to them, how can you do this to our child and put these nonsense ideas into his head? And, what do you think you're doing? And so they apologized and they said, well, we're just doing what they believed they were told to do. But there was something about this that really attracted me. And so when I went back to our city where we came from, I asked my parents if I could go on a spiritual journey. I said to them, I wanted to have a look at other religions because it's the first time I'd come across any other religion outside of the Catholic Church. And so I started my spiritual journey. But my parents said there was one condition. I had to take a chaperone with me. Somebody had to come with me to make sure that I wasn't brainwashed like I had been the first time with these guys on the beach playing their guitars. So the first church I went to was a very interesting church. And this was the total opposite to the Catholic Church. When I walked into this church, as I started coming into the entrance to the door, I could hear people singing and playing music, and there was electric guitars playing and drums playing and organs playing and pianos playing and people with tambourines and girls singing and men singing all together. Oh, wow, this is like a Christian discotheque. I thought, this is going to be fun. They're going to have all sorts of fun in this place. When we walked in, I saw these people swaying backwards and forwards and jumping around and speaking in languages, which I later found out to be tongues, which is supposedly a spiritual language that only certain people in the world can receive. And so I thought, wow, this is very interesting. But I didn't really get attracted by the music, strangely enough. I didn't really get attracted by the sounds of all the different instruments playing, but I did get attracted by who was standing on the stage. Whoa, there on the stage were these girls, all these young girls, half-naked girls, you know, with these shorts on and these open tops. And I thought, wow, this is a church. You go to church and you get all these things to see. And I didn't realize at that time that this was actually a distraction. This would actually pull you away from what you should be doing. And so I went to the church. I thought, wow, this is a good reason to go to church if this is what I'm going to see in the church. And strangely, somewhere along the line, I think Allah knew that my intention was wrong. And so he put this inside of me to stay away from this church. And so I never went back to that church again. And my brother asked me, who was 5 years older than me, why don't you want to go back to the church? And I said, I don't know. Something inside of me tells me not to go back there. And I think it was the distractions from all these young girls and the mixing of all the people together. So I continued going each week to a different church, from one church to the next. Either this one was too conservative or the other church. there was too much happening, or this one had too much music, or this one had too many people scantily dressed. Whatever the reason was, I went from church to church, and this went on for a good part of a year. So after this voyage that I went on and on looking for places to find a home in, somewhere that I'd say, well, this is going to be my new spiritual haven, this is going to be my church, I came across a group of people that were going to go on a camp soon. Somebody through my school said, listen, their church is going to have a camp, and they're going away for 2 weeks in the December holidays. Now, in South Africa, our longest school holidays are in December because that's our summer. And December is our summer, and it's really, really hot. So they give us off like almost a month or maybe a month and a half we have off from school. So we went on this church camp. And on this church camp, they had little courses, and you could learn to do abseiling, you could do whitewater rafting, you could do all sorts of activities, but they also had lessons. And every night you had to go to this chapel. The chapel was open, or this church was open from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you were there until about 5:30, and they had a lesson or a teaching. And the one day I was sitting in this church, and this church was beautiful. It was the whole church was made of glass. So you could see everything that was happening on the outside. And in the front of the church where the priest stood, there was a backdrop of a beautiful river flowing. And it had these willow trees that hung over the river. And you could see in the late afternoon, by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the swallows would fly down and swoop down, and they'd pick up all the little insects that were near the water's edge. And so this was a beautiful setting. It was the most romantic setting that you could imagine. It was beautiful. It made me feel clean. It made me feel comfortable. It made me feel at ease. And so at this time, I was probably about 14 or 15 years old already. And so this was a beautiful setting, and I thought, wow, this is so amazing. And I remember seeing the mist starting to come up off the water and how everything was just absolutely serene and perfect. And I sat there and I felt this calmness come over me. A priest walked in and he stood in the front and he started to talk. And the words that he started to speak really seemed to get through to me. Now, when we have the short break, when we get back, I'll tell you what he said. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. And I was talking in the earlier part on how my reversion to, or my conversion to Christianity took place. And I was saying how this, I was in this church, it was made of glass, how everything was perfect, the scenery was perfect, the willow trees were hanging over the river was running by, the birds were swooping down, it was absolutely beautiful. The sun was on its way down, so that everything looked this purpley red color. It was absolutely the most perfect scene I've ever seen. And in came this priest, and he stood in front of everybody, and he started to talk. And everything he said, I hang on every word he said. And he said, if you were to die today, and he was talking to everybody that was there, if you had to die today, and God were to say to you, why should I let you into my heaven? What would you say? And so I thought about what I would say. And the priest turned to me and he said to me, what would you say, boy? What would you say? And I said, well, I would say that I try to do good, and I try to do what is right, and I hope that all my good actions overwork my bad actions and all the bad things that I did. And he said, that wouldn't be enough. No guarantee you would get into heaven, even if you did all the good deeds in the world, even if you never sinned once in your life, if you died without saying these magic words that I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior, you're going to hell. And I thought, wow, that's a bit rough. And he said, no, that's the way it is. Anyway, I was caught up in the emotion and I was caught up in the feeling, and I thought, well, you know, this is probably the right thing to do. And so what I did is I stood up there and I said, yes, I want to become a Christian, because I didn't want to go to hell. I knew from the beginning, from a little boy, I didn't want to go to hell, and I knew I wanted to go to heaven. That I knew from day one. So I became a Christian, and that day I became a born-again Christian. And so there was no doubt in my mind that I wanted this. I had no doubt in my mind that I wanted to be a Christian. And so what happened is the priest said to me, listen, you need to read this book. And he gave me a Bible, and I started to read this book, and it was fascinating. I started in the book of Genesis, and I couldn't put it down. I just keep reading more and more and more. A really interesting book. You know what was fascinating about the Bible to me? It was one of the nicest storybooks I've ever read. And that's why I can see why it's such a bestseller. You see, because a good storybook should have a good introduction, it should have a good body, and it should have a good ending. Now, this book was there to captivate you, to hold you. And maybe there was problems that I had. Many, right in the beginning, I found there were inconsistencies, and there were errors, and there were problems. But as a storybook, very, very good. Fantastic stories. Stories about battles. Stories about fathers and sons turning on each other and killing each other. How mother and daughter turned on each other. How father slept with daughter. All these strange things. It was like watching Days of Our Lives or one of these soap operas that you watch on television. Or I read this book and it was fascinating. It was like an adventure story. But yes, the morals were a bit dubious, and yes, the stories were a bit strange, but it did captivate me, and I did read it. And then very soon I became the chairman of the Student Christian Association. And I used to start teaching people and lecture people about how to be a stronger Christian, how to be a better Christian. I became an evangelist, which meant I used to stand on street corners giving out books about how to become a Christian. I really believed in Christianity. I was totally committed. I was involved with the African National Congress, the ANC, and I was a Christian, and I was very involved in the Christian community in the African National Congress. And as I started practicing my Christianity more and was involved in politics more, I had a problem with the separation of the races. And so I started a church when I was still, I wasn't a pastor or anything, I was still a schoolgoer, where I try and bring different denominations and different races together so we could have groups to discussions together and see what problems there were with, say, the black race to the Indian race to the white race. One day, a friend of mine asked me to come to his church, and I went to his church, and it was the Seventh-day Adventist church. Now, the difference between the Seventh-day Adventist church and the Baptist church is this. The Baptist church believe that the only way to get to heaven is by saying these magic words that I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Seventh-day Adventist church believe that you need to keep the Ten Commandments as well as say those words. Now, there was a problem because I leaned more towards obeying the law and knowing that there has to be some type of consequence for your actions. So I became a dual citizenship person. I had citizenship in the Baptist church, and I had citizenship in the Seventh-day Adventist church. The nice thing about this is I actually didn't have any problems with it with my day-to-day life, because Seventh-day Adventists went to church on a Saturday, and the Baptist church, we went to church on a Sunday. So I could go Saturday and Sunday. So this shows my commitment. I really was committed to the Bible, really committed to understanding as much as possible about Christianity. I did every course. I did Master Life. I did the EE3. Those of you who are Christians will know exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about these programs. This is why I was still at school. I got involved in outreach work. I did missionary work on the holidays. I was really committed to Christendom. I loved God. I loved God with all my heart. And I really believed that God was the one and only only one who could control my life and lead my life in a way that would be successful for me. And so as the years went by, I decided that the logical thing for me to do was to go and study theology when I finished school. And so I had jobs and I worked, and then I would go and study for a few years and then come back and work again and study for a few years, because I paid my own way as I went along. And I studied at different universities and different colleges and different facilities, and wherever I could, I studied as much as possible. So for about a 12-year period, I studied Christian theology. During this time, I came across many Muslims. And some of the Muslims I came across were people that I thought were oppressed. In other words, I'd meet women, I'd say, you know, you don't have to be oppressed anymore. You can be free. You don't have to wear those clothes. You don't have to be downtrodden. You don't have to let your husband control you. And obviously, I had no idea what I was talking about. And then I'd meet young boys, and especially 11, 12 years old, and I say to him, you need to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. You need to become a Christian. So I'd go stand outside mosques. So I'd stand at the entrance where children were going to a mosque and try and preach them. So I was very determined to bring Muslims to Christianity. Obviously, I never had any results, but I tried. I'd go to the Hindu temples, and I'd do the same things at Hindu temples. I'd go everywhere, and I'd preach to people and try to bring people to Christianity. Now, at this time, I was a pastor, and I had a church that I was involved with. I was a minister of note in the Methodist church, which means I would go talk at different places. I'd be sent out anywhere I want, wherever they wanted me to go, and I'd go and preach there. I was also a lay pastor and a youth pastor in the Baptist church in the town that I grew up in, and I was a deacon in the Dutch Reformed Church, or the Ingerkerk, as we call it in our country, and I was a missionary. So I was involved, as you can see, in many different ways. I did sermons, I did lessons, I did teaching in a number of places and a number of our facilities. I used to go talk at schools, I'd go talk at all sorts of places, wherever it was. The time came where I had to go do my national service in my country. I refused to do national service. I was a religious objector. I didn't believe in killing people, especially because it was a racist regime that was in control of my country, and I wasn't going to shoot somebody or kill somebody because my government told me to, because I didn't believe in the government that I had then. But anyway, eventually I was forced to go and do my 2 years national service. And I did my 2 years national service, and during my 2 years national service, I served in the military as a chaplain, which meant I was a spiritual guide or a spiritual helper, or as a pastor or a priest in the military. So I would help people in need. So I was a Christian chaplain in the military, and I would help people that were in need or had any advice that they needed, especially those who were under stress, and those who were sick or had been hurt in confrontation or military operations. So I was deeply committed. There was no doubt. None of my people would have doubted that I was a Christian. I was deeply committed to Christianity. I deeply believed in everything. However, I began to see cracks. And the cracks started to show from the day I became a Christian, because I found verses in the Bible that just didn't seem to make sense to me. Verses that seemed to jump out at you and so show me clearly that Jesus could not be who we claimed him to be. That the Ten Commandments were only meant for people of the Old Testament, but they were also meant for the people of the New Testament. And that the prophets that were spoken about all came with exactly the same message. And so as I started reading more and more of the Bible, I found myself becoming more and more conservative. I found that I wanted a more traditional form of Christianity, and not a Christianity that just said once saved, always saved. I believe, for example, that what was the point of Jesus' death on the cross? Did Jesus' death on the cross actually do anything? You see, for me, it meant that only thing that meant is that I wouldn't have to go to a temple and make a sacrifice of an animal, but I was still responsible for my sin. I still had to confess my sin. I still had to make restitution for what I've done wrong. So what was the point of Jesus' death on the cross? So the more I started looking into the Bible, the more problems I started to find. Like, why would Jesus need to die on the cross? What was the purpose? There was no purpose. You see, when you commit a sin, you're guilty of that sin. So no matter how much blood Jesus died for your sins for, you're still guilty for that sin. Somebody still has to pay the price. Now, the Christian will say the price was paid by Christ. And so as I started looking deeper and deeper into the Bible, the more I discovered that many of these doctrines are doctrines that could not possibly be. One day, as I got further and further into my studies and became more and more dubious or doubted more and more what I found in the Bible, I was asked to do a sermon. And the sermon that I was given was on the topic of male-female relations. And this was to be the sermon that would change my life forever. Because in preparation of the sermon, I was to find out what it really means to be a Christian and what it really means to be somebody who searches for the truth and lets the truth set him free. You see, for me, as I prepared this talk and as I started to prepare the sermon, it was going to change me and shake me to the very, very core. Now, today, we have come to the end of this program, and we don't have enough time to go into the next part, but inshallah, in the next part of this series, we're going to look at what was it that I had to prepare this talk on, and what was it that shook me to my core of my foundation? What was it that changed me, that made me realize that I had to change? It made me realize that there was a need to find truth, an ultimate truth, not a truth that could be changed as the weeks and the days went by, but a truth that would hold true for years to come, that would be so strong that it would prevent me from going to the left or to the right, but keep me on the straight path, the middle path, the path of truth, the path of Islam. So inshallah, when we meet again, we'll get to the crucial part of this talk. So from me, Arib Islam, assalamu alaikum. I am a